Hello, everyone. Again, this is Leora here from E2R, and I just want to welcome you to our May e-learning. Today, our topic, as you're all aware, is compensation and employee motivation. But before we get started, just a few reminders to go through. If you have any questions during the presentation, feel free to use the chat box at the bottom right-hand side of your screen to type them out. I'll do my best to answer the questions during the presentation, but in the off chance that I don't get to your question, I'll reach out to you, or our client care team will reach out to you afterwards to schedule a call to speak with one of our advisors about your question. In case you've missed any of our past webinars, you can find the recordings on e2rsolutions.com, and the PowerPoint presentations can be found in your own member portal. And lastly, I want to take this opportunity to remind all of you that the information contained within our webinars is an overview only and is not intended as an analysis of all areas of employment and labor law and should not be relied upon as legal advice for any given situation. As always, contact us for any specific questions related to the information in this webinar or any topic, and for the specific applicability of this topic area to your workplace. So at this point, let's mark our calendars for our next e-learning, which will be taking place on June 26th. So in a month from now, that'll be great. And without further ado, let's get started here. So today we're talking about employee motivation and compensation. And on our agenda, we're going to go through a few major key topics related to this bigger topic, which I'll go through right now. So first of all, let's talk about why does employee motivation matter? So, you know, why are we even talking about this topic? We'll have a brief discussion about that. And I'll go into some specifics about how we can use money as a motivator, so the different types of compensation and the behavior that we're trying to elicit, and as well to take into consideration not only just positive aspects of different types of compensation and compensation structure, but also some of the negative aspects of using different types of compensation to elicit specific behavior. So it's always good to you know, look at a situation with open eyes and know the good as well as the bad. Finally, we'll tie everything together and touch briefly upon performance management. So how does compensation structure fit into the big picture? And then we'll have a conclusion. So let's get started here. So why does employee motivation matter? And I think that's a really great question. I'm sure a lot of you are aware listening today that, you know, the greatest cost for just about every single business is their labor cost. So, you know, it's really important that you make your money work for you. Make the money that you spend on labor have a positive impact on your workplace. Pay as a strategy can elicit specific behavior. So maybe we want to target specific behavior or outcomes, or maybe we don't realize it, but the way that we're paying our employees currently, or the pay structure that we've chosen to use and that's currently in place, might be resulting in undesired consequences. So this is a really great thing to at least stop, pause and assess how are you paying your employees, and think about is there an opportunity to elicit different behavior, or are we inadvertently causing some problems? Now, we also know that a motivated employee is going to be a more productive employee. So someone who comes at work and feels like they have goals and something to work towards is more likely to get a higher volume of work completed. And having motivated employees will necessarily help your organization as a whole achieve its own goals, whether that's it, sales goals, revenue goals, productivity goals, whatever the case might be. Motivated employees are also much more likely to have higher level of job satisfaction. And job satisfaction will always really be sort of a big circle. You know, if you're satisfied with your job, if you're happy in your workplace, you're more motivated to work harder, et cetera, and the organization will more likely achieve its goals. So it's basically a self-fulfilling process. prophecy. It will also create more workforce stability. So employees who are motivated in the workplace, who feel that they're making an actual contribution, a positive contribution, are less likely to quit, to have lower levels of turnover. In addition, these types of employees who do have overall job satisfaction and are motivated to work towards a greater organization goal are more likely to be cooperative with their employer as well as with their fellow employees. So I think a lot of reasons why employee motivation really does matter. And if you haven't thought about it to date or you haven't made it a priority, maybe now is an opportunity to stop and think about how we can, you know, how you can use compensation the type of impact that motivation has on your own workplace. So I'm going to start this presentation off a fictitious case study. You know, the purpose of this is really to make an example. And after I present this case study to you, you know, we're going to pause, we're going to stop, we're going to think about it, go through all the topics, and then we'll return to the case study after we've acquired all this knowledge of the compensation. We'll go back to the case study and we'll see how we can learn. So let's get into the case study. Kodak Inc. operates a coach booth at the annual wage to check the patrons' books. So these students earn low hourly wage. The job comes no benefit. And the only opportunity for advancement is to become a supervisor, which comes in nominal boring and repetitive hours long. Management is rarely present to supervise the employees. Turnover is very high. Management does not trust the employees, and this is made very clear by the fact that theft is discouraged since all the pockets of the actual uniforms the employees wear are sewn shut. In addition, a count is kept of all the coach subs used in a day, and then this is balanced against the actual cash in the till. Basically, if 100 coats are checked, there will be 100 coats subs that they submit at the end of their shift, and there should be $100 in the till, assuming that each voter checks their dollar. Employees are unfriendly to patrons, and horseplay is frequent. Supervisors often participate in this behavior. Patrons are often deterred from approaching the co-check booth as a result. So, yeah, to me, this sounds like a hot mess. So as a result of this, you know, moving along, as a result of this scenario, some employees have creatively found a way to enhance their compensation. So keep in mind that these individuals are earning minimum wage. So they found a way to enhance their meager compensation by reusing co-check stubs for return when customers retrieve their coats. This results in an increased income, and the official count of the coat check stubs and the receipts will balance. Just to make sure everyone understands, I come back early and I give you coat stub number 5. The employee then resells that coat check stub. That way the overall tally of the stubs is only maybe 100, but maybe the total amount of dollars taken in, so the revenue is 105. And so $5 can be pocketed by the employees, which is overt theft. Not all employees participate in this scam. Those that do not are typically people with strong work ethic values. But in denying themselves access to these rewards, so to speak, they feel dissatisfied with their workplace and they often quit. So there's clearly an issue about turnover at co-checking. The reward system used by Kochek Inc. ends up creating a workforce dishonest, irresponsible employees. So by paying these individuals by the hour a very low wage, there's no motivation for the employees to actually be honest or to work hard and to present themselves properly to the patrons. I think it's very obvious that Coachcheck Inc.'s employees lack motivation. So moving along, the question I think we want to ask ourselves is it the compensation structure in particular that's reinforcing this negative behavior and high turnover? And how can this situation be changed? So let's get into different types of compensation that exists that we can use. So money as a motivator. Money can be used to motivate employees. And there are three possible ways of structuring compensation with the goal of motivating employees. And we're going to go through each of these different types of money as a motivator tools. And within them, there are also different types of, there are different categories within them. So the first one that we're going to go through is various types of individual performance pay. The second one is the different types of group performance pay. And the third one is organization performance pay. So let's get started on individual performance pay. So the first type of individual performance pay that we're going to talk about is called piece rate. So, you know, in a piece rate system, instead of an hourly wage rate where you're just getting paid regardless of what you produce, what you do in the workplace, as long as you're, you know, physically in the workplace with a pulse, you'll get paid that hourly wage. A piece rate system is a pay system under which individuals receive a specified sum of money for each unit of output they produce or they process. So as you can imagine, if you're getting paid per widget that you make, there is a really strong link or connection between output and the reward that you get and the pay that you get. Now, I think we typically imagine piece rate systems being implemented in maybe manufacturing industries or in situations. I know that it's used a lot, let's say in the construction industry. So if you're someone who does drywalling, maybe for each house of drywall you complete, you get X number of dollars. But it's also seen a lot in the service industry, if you think about it. So, you know, a good example would be a barber shop. Maybe a barber gets paid per head of hair that is cut. Or tree planting, where you get paid per tree that's planted. And even something like physicians, you know, physicians bill per service that is provided. So when we think about piece rate systems, you know, there's lots of advantages of implementing the type of pay system, but also lots of disadvantages to keep in mind. So the advantages are, and I think this, you know, without saying, highly motivational. If you're going to get paid literally per unit that's produced of whatever it is that you're producing, you're likely going to end up wanting to produce more items, more widgets, more whatever it is that you're producing, and work faster in order to achieve a higher rate of production. I'm just going to pause here for a moment. I'm not sure if anyone in the audience is experiencing some screen blacking out issues. We're also experiencing the same issue, and we're trying to fix the problem. So if you're having a problem and you're unable to keep watching it, just want to remind you you can also watch this presentation and listen to this presentation later on in your portal, but I do hope that you stick with us. So way back to the advantages, it's obviously very highly motivational because of the direct link between output and reward, and that will cause employees to work harder and faster. Now, I think the disadvantage is literally a result of the advantage, which is that, you know, quality could end up being compromised because if we're focusing on the quantity of output we're not necessarily focusing anymore on the quality of output. The other thing is that, you know, it's pretty obvious also that doing case rate systems does not apply in all workplaces. There's a very limited number of circumstances where this would be effective. So it can't be where production has any interdependence between employees. So if we're creating widgets and it takes 4 employees to create that widget, how are you going to pay, how are you going to know which employee contributed what and the percentage that this person contributed to the creation of the product, et cetera, et cetera? It just wouldn't work. The other thing is it can't be used in an environment where there's constantly changing tools and skills, because every time you, in a piece rate system, every time you make a big change to whether it's the tools or the skills required, the actual piece rate would have to be recalculated, and I think it would become a very cumbersome process. So definitely there's some advantages, but it's very limited in the circumstances where this would work. Now, keeping in mind, you know, the purpose of this presentation is we're really talking about motivation. So let's move on to talk about whether piece rates are considered to be effective motivators. And I think the answer is pretty straightforward, and based on everything I've already said about the advantages and disadvantages, is that it's highly motivational, but only in the right circumstances. So in those very limited number of circumstances, and especially where you don't feel that it's going to be too detrimental on the quality of production. Individual workers control their own production. Interdependence between workers is low, and each unit of production can be easily measured and priced. So those are pretty much the three factors that need to be in place for this to be an effective way to pay your employees. So let's move on to the next type of individual performance pay. And this is probably one that a lot of people who are listening right now, you might have paid your own employees this way, or at least there's more of a familiarity with it, and that's commission pay. So again, commission is similar to the piece rate system, where employees are paid based on output, not just based on the hours that they work. So commission is pay that is geared to the dollar volume of sales or transactions that are conducted. And it's typically a percentage of gross sales. And in some circumstances where there's a more sophisticated commission plan, that commission rate might vary based on the product or the service that's sold. So maybe certain products earn a higher commission rate based on their value or certain services, et cetera, et cetera. So again, you know, just like any type of pay strategy, there's going to be some advantages and there's also going to be some disadvantages. So in terms of advantages, you know, if your goal is to increase your sales, if that's something that your organization's work is centered on, then, you know, it's very, very likely that by paying someone based on the volume of sales that they do, that your sales will increase, because that's the motivation. The motivation is, if you sell more, Johnny, you're going to get paid more. So that's a major motivator. Another big advantage is that it reduces employer risk. And what I mean by that is that your worker pay is directly linked to your revenue. So if no widgets are sold, then the employee, you know, depending on the way the commission is structured and whether there's a base pay as well or a draw, but if no widgets are sold, then the employee doesn't get paid. But if 1 million widgets are sold, then the employee will be paid accordingly. So it reduces the employer risk and the costs associated with labor. It's also easy to set and measure. So if you set a commission rate, you know how much revenue you're going to get from selling your products, and you know how many widgets the employee sold, it's pretty easy to determine how much money they should be paid based on that information, that readily available information. So it seems like there's a lot of advantages to using commission. So of course, you know, there's another side to every coin. Let's talk about the disadvantages. Now, if the only way that you're paid is by virtue of the volume of sales that you produce, then it's unlikely you're going to be motivated to do anything else. So one of the disadvantages is that employees are not motivated to do work that does not result directly in compensation. So for example, if you have an employee who, as part of their sales, there's all sorts of in the office administrative work that needs to be done in order to, complete the sale or whatever the case might be, it's likely that your employee is not going to be that motivated to do that kind of work if it's not part of the process of them earning that commission, or if there's any other type of work that literally they feel they're not being paid for. So if it's not directly related to sales, they're going to feel they're not being compensated for that work. The other disadvantage is that in a situation where employees earn commission, especially for employees who earn 100% commission, income for that employee might be highly variable. Maybe if it's seasonal work or sales in an industry where the sales are seasonal in nature, or if there's a really long sales cycle. So for certain people, that might be a drawback, and you might have retention issues as a result, especially if someone's just starting out and they don't have a base of customers or income coming in. So that's something to keep in mind, is that that type of highly variable income might not be very attractive to all employees. So let's move on and let's chat about whether commission, in light of these advantages and disadvantages, is an effective motivator. And researchers have identified three key dimensions that should be present for commission to be a successful motivator. The first is the degree of independence. So if salespeople need to work in a large group to conduct sales, it's less likely that commission will be highly motivational for them. The second is the degree of persuasive skills required. So the harder, the more you need to have those persuasive skills, the more likely it is to be motivational. And also the length of the sales cycle. So if you have a really long sales cycle, so from the start of presenting a certain product to a potential customer, all the way to the actual sale taking place, like if that takes a year, it's less likely that commission is going to be an effective motivator, because you're not going to be seeing that reward as frequently as you like. So in summary, the more that each salesperson works independently of others, the higher the degree of persuasive skills required, and the shorter the length of the sales cycle, the greater will be the proportion of commission to base pay. Meaning that if all those things are present, 100% commission will be highly motivational. If all those things are not present or are present in a lower degree, then doing some kind of a combination of base pay plus commission is more likely to be a better motivator. So let's move on to our next category of individual performance pay. The first of which is merit pay. So I think these are both going to be very familiar topics for our audience today. So merit pay, or as we would colloquially think of it as just a raise, is an increase to an employee's base pay in recognition of good job performance. So oftentimes in a workplace, every year, maybe during your annual review period, if you do something like that, you notify your employee, okay, you're going to get a pay raise of X number of dollars this year. Here's your new base salary. So the advantage of merit pay is that it does help retain good performers. So if you have individuals who are good performers, and every year, as a result of their hard work, they can tangibly see that their salary, their base salary, continuously increases in a substantial enough amount that it matters to them, then you're more likely to retain those employees. And it provides feedback to employees. So if you genuinely provided a pay increase where it's merited and you don't where it's not, well, then you're sending a very clear message to your employees about their job performance. Now, obviously, there are disadvantages. Pay increases can be very expensive. You have to think of them as essentially a permanent change in the employee's pay. So if you give someone a pay increase and then you have a downturn in your business, well, that's their salary. And lowering their salary is something that's wrought with its own legal issues, and it's not as simple as we'd like it to be. So it can be a very expensive merit pay system. It also requires an employee appraisal system. So if you don't have a system in place where you're actually conducting performance reviews and you're tying your pay increase to some assessment of merit, then you know, I don't see how it can be a motivator. It's just an arbitrary pay increase that the employee can rely on every year as a cost of living increase or whatever the case might be. You know, it's not really going to motivate the employee to work harder. Another disadvantage is it also might inhibit collaborative behavior. So a pay raise is something that's very individual in nature. Unless collaborative work is part of your performance management system or is seen as a key indicator of success in your workplace, your employees are going to do what it takes for them individually to perform well and get that pay increase. Now, another type of merit pay that I'm sure everyone's also familiar with is bonuses. And these are cash payments provided to recognize good employee performance that doesn't increase your base pay. So, you know, an advantage is that it's not permanent. It's more flexible. So you're not locking yourself into a higher base pay. It's every year based on the company's performance, the individual performance, they get some type of a cash payment. And therefore, you can make a strong tie between the bonus and the financial success of the organization. So if the organization is doing exceedingly well, it'll be a great bonus year. If your organization is not having a good year at all, maybe it's a no bonus year. So it's more flexible and easier for employers to control. Now, some of the disadvantages is it might not be suitable in situations where work is very interdependent. So again, it's more of an individual-based system. So if it's a lot of teamwork and you're unable to assess the individual contributions to the team, then you know it might not be the best system in place. And it requires valid performance measures. So if we're actually going to tie bonus to merit, we need to have some way that we can assess the employee's performance and to assess whether they have actually merited that bonus. So again, similar to merit pay, the raise, you know, if you do it in the absence of some kind of a performance appraisal system or performance management system, then in terms of motivation, it's kind of useless. So moving on, let's talk about whether merit pay is an effective motivator. And you know, I think I'm going to repeat what I just said, which is yes, but only in suitable conditions. So here's a list of questions that I think can be very useful to ask yourself when you're deciding whether merit pay is a good idea for your workplace. So the first question is the individual performance variable? So many lower level jobs are routine and not variable. If performance isn't variable, then why waste your time trying to measure the variation? So if an individual is literally, regardless of what they are doing, pressing a button, and as long as they press that button, they're getting the job done. There is no variability, and how can you assess whether they did well at pressing the button or they didn't do well at pressing the button? So it would not be a good situation in work circumstances. They're not variable at all. The second question to ask is performance controllable by the individual? So circumstances are beyond the employee's control. Gearing pay to individual performance makes no sense. So if it's seasonal, if it's based on weather, or if you know the work's going to come in no matter what, and a person's just inputting data no matter what, and they have no impact on the outcome, well, then some kind of merit pay really makes no sense. The third question is, can individual performance be separated out? So if you have it a group setting, you know, and I touched on this earlier, where you can't parse out individual contribution, then you may want to turn your mind to more of a team-based performance pay system. The fourth question is, can an accurate performance appraisal system be developed? So does this exist in your organization? Do you have the resources to implement something like this? If your goal is to use merit pay to motivate specific behavior from your employee, but you don't have some kind of a performance management or appraisal system, then either implement that system or don't use this as your motivator, because in the absence of that, then it's just an arbitrary sum of money that's being given to the employee. It won't motivate them. The fifth question to ask is, will pay actually be linked to performance appraisals? So your organization has to be prepared to set aside money and create meaningful pay differences between those employees that are meritorious and the other employees. So if I'm your employee and I'm doing a stellar job and I know that the person next to me is doing a terrible job, and I also know that we get paid just about the same thing or our bonus was exactly the same, what's going to motivate me to work harder next year if I know that regardless of how hard you work, you get a 10% bonus or a 20% bonus? So it has to be a meaningful, pay, and it also has to be linked to performance appraisals. The sixth question to ask is, will the merit system serve a purpose that cannot be served in some other way? So to motivate employee performance, maintain equity by making rewards commensurate with contribution, salary progression, and things like that. But can these purposes be achieved some way else? So like, if you're doing pay increases and you know that these are permanent changes, maybe there's another way that you can pay your employees or that you can create motivation in your workplace without having to commit yourself to a pay increase. The seventh question is, are there any undesirable side effects? So if your employees only focus exclusively on one visible aspect of their job, is that going to conflict with other responsibilities they have? So is the employee always going to work hard at shining in the way that our manager can see them shining, but perhaps then neglect other aspects of their job that still need to be get done, but would otherwise go unnoticed? And finally, the eighth question is, will the merit system fit with the company's culture and strategy? So if this type of individualistic approach to motivation and to merit doesn't fit within your organization's culture, then this is probably not the right motivator for you. Let's move on now to our final individual performance pay idea, which is the concept of special purpose incentive. So this is a bit different because it's not necessarily something that you would implement all the time or on an ongoing basis. Maybe it's just pay that would be used to foster certain behaviors that are of particular importance to an organization, or if you're trying to counteract behaviors that are causing problems for you. So, you know, by way of example, in case you're scratching your head and you're wondering what could this possibly be, you know, there's all sorts of creative ideas that you can implement as a special purpose incentive. You know, let's say you were trying to incent your employees to think creatively about certain processes that can be implemented in the workplace. Maybe you can reward and promote innovative thinking by having a suggestion box, and employees can submit suggestions. And if an employee's suggestion is implemented and it results in, you know, savings to the company or the production of a new product or something like that, then maybe the employee will earn a percentage of the money that was earned by the organization, or a cash bonus or something like that. You know, a problem that a lot of companies face, especially in work environments where you have low-skilled workers, is attendance. So an attendance bonus, you can have something where each day employee comes to work on time, they're allowed to draw a card from a deck of cards or playing cards. And at the end of the week, the employee who has the best five-card poker hand gets a cash prize. Or maybe they get to put a ballot in a box and you make a draw every week and you draw for a gift certificate or a cash bonus. So that's what I mean by special purpose incentives. So there, the advantages of this type of pay is that obviously it's going to motivate employees to focus their attention on a behavior that's of key importance to the organization at that time. But again, just like some other of the incentives we've spoken about, it might cause employees to neglect other important behaviors. So if they're so focused on receiving that special purpose incentive, maybe they'll ignore some other aspect of their job. But I think it's a really neat idea if you do have certain behavior you're trying to elicit. I mean, a lot of companies will have some kind of a bonus that you pay if someone recruits a new employee and they're a successful hire. So if turnover is a problem or if retaining skilled workers is a problem, that's a really good example of special purpose incentives that a lot of organizations have are currently using in their workplace. So now that we've talked about individual performance pay, let's switch gears now and talk about group performance pay. So this is a bit less common in workplaces, but also can be very effective as a motivator. So the first type of group performance pay we're going to talk about is gain sharing plans. So whenever employees work in a group, if they're able to improve productivity or reduce costs, the resulting savings are split between the company and the work group. So a gain for the company is then split between the company and the employees. So the major advantage of this type of pay strategy is that it's self-funding. So, you know, the employees themselves and the idea itself, that produces the funds from which the bonuses are paid. So instead of the employer having to pull money out of their back pocket, if the idea or the gains that the employee suggested creates additional funds, that's what's split between the employer and the group of employees. The other advantage is that it motivates employees to generate productivity-enhancing money-saving suggestions. So that really is going to help your organization's bottom line. Now, obviously, when you have any type of group performance pay incentive, free riding is always going to be something to keep in mind as a problem. So, you know, if you have a group and one person realizes that they can, you know, put the brakes on and not work as hard, but then earn off of the gains and the hard work of their fellow group members, you know, free riding can take place. And that can create some animosity and malaise amongst the group if they know or they're observing that one of their colleagues is doing this. Another disadvantage is that employees may focus exclusively on earning their bonuses at the expense of product or service quality. So let's say, for example, you have a group of employees that work on the shipping team of your warehouse, and they think of a strategy that will cause or create faster methods to load boxes into crates or something like that. You know, they're going to be so focused on the efficiency that perhaps the product quality will be sacrificed as a result. So maybe this faster system will result in more breakage or more damaged boxes. So it might not be an all-around win-win for everyone. So that's something to keep in mind. Moving along to the next group performance pay strategy, so now that we've identified what gain sharing is, let's talk about whether it's an effective motivator. So research shows that gain sharing plans can have a positive result on employee motivation and company performance in the right setting. So obviously, this is only going to work in a setting where there is room for efficiencies or where, you know, there is group-based work where this type of gain sharing can actually take place. It also requires trust, communication, training, and participative workplace culture. So if your workplace and the type of work that your employees do is very individualistic in nature, then some kind of a gain sharing plan probably won't be effective as a motivator. And it thrives, obviously, in workplaces that already use teams, where if that structure, that work structure is already in place, then implementing some kind of a gain sharing plan, you already have people working in groups, working cooperatively and being able to be effective that way, you know, that transition will work a lot better. So just like any type of pay strategy, it's very case specific. Let's move now to another type of group performance pay, which is goal sharing plans. Now, goal sharing plans are where management sets goals for one or more performance indicators for a group or team to be met with specified time periods. And if the goals are met, all team members receive a bonus. So this is very different from gain sharing. Gain sharing focuses on cost savings that are quantified and then shared between the company and the employee group, but no goals are actually set by the organization. Whereas goal sharing is kind of like an all or nothing. Employees receive nothing if the goal isn't met. The goal is set by the organization, so they don't have to think of the idea or the goal, and they just work towards it. So the advantages are that it will definitely motivate employees to achieve specific objectives that support the company's strategy and goals. It's flexible. It can be easily adjusted. So the company can change the goals or make the goal whatever it wants to be based on whatever the organization's strategic goals as a whole are. And it's very possible that it'll generate positive group norms. And what I mean by that is a cohesive, cooperative work environment, because groups of people are all working towards one common goal. Now, the disadvantages are that, you know, setting the goals can be a bit difficult. So if the goal itself is too hard to achieve, then the employees are just going to ignore it. If they know from the outset that it's an insurmountable task, why would they even bother trying? You know, keep in mind, again, that it's an all or nothing. So you're not going to get compensated for meeting half of the goal. And if the goal that's been set is too easy, then the money that's will be paid out unnecessarily. So if everyone's just reaching their goal so easily, you're going to be spending more money than you wanted to. And quite frankly, it'll inadvertently set like a de facto limit on the employee's performance. So an unintended ceiling. Why would the employee work harder if they've already met that goal? And if the goal is too easy, then they're not going to work harder than the goal. And going back to this idea of all or nothing, that's another disadvantage. So it's a bit discouraging if you achieve 99% of the goal, but you don't get any reward for that, because you know, you only get rewarded if the goals are completely achieved, not just almost achieved. So that could be a disadvantage. Now, in light of these advantages and disadvantages, are goal sharing plans effective motivators? Well, to work well, goal sharing plans must be designed with input from employees, clearly communicate factors affecting goal achievement and ways that employees can influence these factors, and communicate progress towards meeting goals on an ongoing basis. So you don't want your employees just floating in an abyss, not knowing whether or not the contributions they're making have been meaningful or are pushing the group in the right direction. It also requires trust between management and employees. So the employees have to trust that management has set the goals reasonably, that they won't cancel the program, you know, willy-nilly, in the middle of these employees working so hard to meet those goals, and that they'll follow through with the promised reward. And if the employees can't trust management on this, then they're not going to work towards the goal, because they won't trust that they're going to get the reward that was promised. So moving along, there are other types of group performance pay plans that are also worth talking about briefly. The first of which is a competitive bonus plan. So that's a group pay plan that rewards work groups for outperforming other work groups. So you're basically creating a competition or a contest between work groups for everyone to meet one common goal, and whichever group is the most successful in meeting that goal, they get the bonus. Pooled performance pay is a pay plan in which the performance results of a group are pooled, and group members share equally in the performance bonus. So this may motivate group members to help each other out. And group commission is a performance pay plan in which the commissions of a group of sales workers are pooled and shared out equally among members of the group. So that creates positive group norms and atmospheres typically characterized as competitive. So, you know, a good example of that is typically in restaurant settings, for example, where waitresses earn tips, they then have to pool parts or a certain percentage of their tips and get shared equally amongst, let's say, the kitchen staff. And then that'll create really positive group norms with the kitchen staff to work hard and cohesiveness between the front of house and back of house staff, because everyone's to a certain extent sharing in everyone else's hard work. So moving along, let's talk about organization performance pay. So we've talked about individual, we've also talked about group, but now let's talk about the organization. So the first type of organization performance pay is profit sharing. And so what profit sharing is it's a formal pay program in which an organization provides bonus payments to employees based on the profitability of the organization. So, you know, this is something that actually is a very interesting idea. Because some of the advantages can be very advantageous for an organization. There are three types of organization performance pay plans. The first called current distribution profit sharing plan. And what that essentially is often referred to as a cash plan. So you basically pay a portion of company profits to employees in cash or in company shares in real time. The second one is a deferred profit sharing plan. And what that is an employee share of the profit bonus pool is placed in a trust fund that will then be distributed at a future date, usually on the employee's retirement or on termination of employment. So it can often be used as some form of a retirement savings plan that is administrated by the organization. And the third is a combination profit sharing plan, which, you know, as the title says, provides both cash or shares and a deferred component. So there's lots of advantages, and, you know, the major advantages is that when the interests of the employees are directly aligned with those of the employer, the employees may be more likely to be motivated to improve company performance. It can improve organizational norms. It can improve cooperation between employees, cooperation between the employees and their employer, and just generally like a stronger identification and connection between the employer and the organization that they work for. I think we all think about WestJet slogan that they're all owners too. So it's sort of the same idea that if you're sharing in the profit of an organization, whether it's by shares or cash bonuses based on the company's success, then you're kind of acting like an owner as well. Now, the disadvantages, of course, there's going to be the disadvantage of free riding. It's based on the overall organization's performance. So there will be employees necessarily who are doing, who might benefit from it, even though they're not pulling their weight as much as other individuals. And unfortunately, you know, the cost of the actual profit sharing bonus and the plan's administration may outweigh the benefits. So just to administer the plan and the costs associated with that administration may actually not be worth the total cost of the program altogether. So it's definitely something that requires some organization, administration, and it's not something that just runs itself. Now, keeping all of this in mind, the question is, and going back to the purpose of this whole presentation, is our profit sharing plans effective motivators? Now, studies have shown that Canadian companies that have adopted profit sharing saw it as a way to increase performance, you know, by improving employee motivation, promoting teamwork, helping other employees understand the business, all the positive things that we just talked about. And it's also a way to provide better rewards to employees and improve commitment and loyalty. And all of that positivity, that commitment and that loyalty will also directly result in lower turnover, which results in lower recruitment costs, lower training costs. So, you know, when done properly, it actually can be a very effective motivator. So let's move on now to the next type of organization performance pay, which is stock plans. So a stock plan is any type of plan through which employees acquire shares in the organization that employs them. So for example, an employee stock bonus plan is where the employer provides company shares at no cost to the employee. So instead of getting a cash bonus, you get a bonus in shares. An employee share purchase plan is where the employee provides direct payment to the employee for shares, usually below market value. So the employer is giving them the opportunity to buy those shares at a lower cost. And an employee stock option plan is where employees are provided with options to purchase company shares at some future time at a set price, which the employee is likely to exercise if the market price rises and exceeds the price that their option is to purchase those shares. So it allows the employee the future opportunity to buy shares at a price that's lower than market value. Now, the advantages of employee stock plans is that it aligns the goals of the employees with those of the owners, and it causes employees to think like owners. Again, so this idea is of if you own shares or you have the potential to own shares as, you know, the market price increases and you'll be able to get a better price on them, you're going to feel like you have a vested interest in the organization doing well and the price of shares to go up. It creates a stronger understanding and a concern for the overall company performance, so exactly the same. It improves compensation, which, you know, is going to result in employee retention, lower turnover, and it doesn't require the companies to lay out any cash. So, you know, the shares are not like a cash bonus because they're shares. So you're giving the employee either shares at no cost to them or the opportunity for the employee to purchase the shares themselves. Now, the disadvantages are that establishing and administering the plans is costly. So if these plans don't just run themselves, if share prices decline, then employees may become demoralized or disgruntled. So all of this, in theory, works really well if the company's thriving, but if the company's tanking and your employees have the right to buy, you know, valueless shares or the shares that they've already purchased or they have very low value, then obviously that's going to have the opposite effect. And the other issue is that employees may not have the money to invest. So in situations like a share purchase plan or a stock option plan, if your employee doesn't have any money or they're not wealthy or they don't have any, they're not cash rich at all, then they won't be able to really actually exercise that benefit that you're providing to them, which means that you won't get the benefits of the motivation, the tool for motivation. Now, keeping all of this in mind, the question is, are these stock plans effective motivators? And research has shown that the effects of employee stock plans on company performance can range from moderately positive to neutral. So, you know, this doesn't sound like the most overwhelming, no one's roaring and cheering for the crowds here, but, you know, it can be effective. But the key, and everything that I read on this topic, the key really is that when you combine some kind of a stock option plan with employee participation, then there can be dramatic results. So if in addition to company ownership, the employees feel that they can participate, whether it's in meetings or decision-making, company decision-making and things like that, then it's going to have a dramatically better impact on employee motivation than if the employees are just outright given the shares or the stock options and the purchase plans. You know, they'll feel like they have a more of a vested interest in the organization and the results that the organization is getting. So let's move now to organization performance pay, some other types of organization performance pay that might be worth thinking about. So, for example, long-term incentives. So this is something that can be very useful. So that's a plan that's set up so that the payout is contingent on the achievement of, let's say, 3 to 5 year performance goals or retention with the organization. So you could attach it to cash, like a cash bonus, to stock grants or to stock options, and it could look like, okay, if you're employed in 5 years from now, you'll get this cash or this stock option or whatever the case. Your stock option will at that point vest and you can purchase, you can exercise it. Or maybe it'll be achieved to certain performance goals. If your sales meet this target, then this is what you get. And really the goal is twofold. It's, you know, to ensure that we're eliciting a specific type of behavior in the workplace, whether it's sales or productivity, but also employee retention. So the longer the employee stays at the company and achieves these goals, the more they're going to get these incentives. So it, you know, the motivator is twofold there, or the result is twofold. It's performance, but it's also retention. So let's tie it all together now. Where does this all fit into performance management? So when we talk about performance management, whether it's your annual performance management appraisal system, you know, tying it to compensation is so important. Otherwise, I don't know how you're going to use compensation as a motivator if that's your goal. So let's go through the elements of performance management. So element number one is goals. So tied to the strategy and key success factors of the business. So the employee's goals have to be tied to the strategy. And, you know, that's what we're assessing them on, is whether they've reached these goals, like what their goals are. The second is measures. So primary indicators of success. How are we going to assess whether and how are we going to measure whether that employee has achieved those goals? So, and the third element is feedback. So data used to determine progress towards goals. So whether that's in the performance appraisal or throughout the year as coaching sessions or, you know, midterm evaluations, things like that. The fourth element is reinforcement. So active encouragement and support for action. So if an employee does something positive reinforcement. If the employee does something negative reinforcement or discipline, whatever the case might be. And the fifth element, which is, you know, what ties this whole thing together, is rewards. So the fifth element of performance management is, what is the individual or team going to receive for achieving the desired results? So if the individual or the team in your workplace has, through our measurement system and feedback, et cetera, has achieved their goals, how are we going to reward them? And that reward could be any of the things that we've talked about throughout the course of this presentation today. And if your employee knows that through your performance management system, it's all going to lead to number five, then you're more likely to have them achieving higher and getting better results through your performance management system. Otherwise, it might be seen as a bit of a meaningless exercise, quite frankly. So let's go back to our case study. I know that feels like eons ago at this point, but let's go back full circle. And if you'll recall, we talked earlier about this fictitious scenario about Coach Tech Inc., where its employees were unmotivated and they earned minimum wage and there was theft and tomfoolery and even managers weren't behaving properly and they had high turnover. So keeping that whole fact scenario in mind, let's talk about individual merit pay and how that could impact this workplace. So enhancing overall compensation would likely deter theft. So if employees feel that the money they're making in the workplace is commensurate with the work that they're doing or is able to provide them with the necessities of life, then maybe they'll be less likely to actually steal from their employer. So this would require the organization to increase the level of employee supervision and identify specific performance measures. So if you're going to give employees, let's say, raises, then they have to be merit-based on measures, and then supervisors also have to be engaged and, you know, paid accordingly in order to actually do that job. So what about goal sharing? So incorporating a form of group compensation would require the dishonest employees to work cooperatively with the more honest employees. And that might increase job satisfaction, decrease feelings of inequity, and reduce turnover. So if the whole group works together towards a specific goal and then shares in the fruits of that, then you're more likely to have cooperation and cohesiveness amongst the group. And maybe it will change, you know, the group norms altogether. Now, you know, the downfall of this might be some free riding since you already have these bad seeds that exist, but it's an option. And then what about profit sharing? So if the organization's goals are aligned with its employees' goals, employees are more likely to behave in a manner that's in the best interest of the organization. So implementing a long-term incentive, such as an end-of-season profit-sharing bonus, might help reduce turnover, for example. So maybe if you know, certain amounts of profits, a percentage is pooled, and if you work until the last day and you could tie it maybe even to, you know, a performance-based component of your system. If the employee works the last till the last day of the season and was a good performer, then they get to share in this pool of money. So that could also be helpful. So clearly there are ways to use compensation in order to elicit certain behavior or in order to prevent some negative behavior that, you know, and Coachcheck Inc. is an example of some negative behavior that you could try to target with the use of compensation. So in conclusion, keeping employees motivated in the workplace is important. I think if you're someone who works in, for an organization where employees are not motivated, you'll know it just based on productivity and also the group norms and the attitudes in your workplace. And I think one thing that I'm hoping that you have learned or taken away from this presentation is that compensation and pay and the money we spend on labor, which again, will always pretty typically be your greatest expense as an organization, it can be strategically structured to increase productivity, to achieve organizational goals, and to enhance employee commitment and loyalty. So, you know, why don't you put your money to work for you and to make sure that you're spending it well and that you're then, as a result, getting the revenue you want, the sales that you want, the productivity that you want, and the engaged workforce that you want. So that's the end of our presentation. If you have any questions, you know, shoot them to our client care team, and they will definitely make a point of setting you up with one of our advisors to chat with us. And I hope that you learned a lot today and that you enjoyed the presentation. Thanks so much.